All right, who has the first question? Yes, sir. Andrew, right?
Yeah.
Right on.
How do you know when to pull the trigger when you're making a decision?
Great question. So when we make decisions, it's so interesting because people think that every problem that creates a decision has a solution, and there's a lapse of time between the time you see a problem, make a decision, and find the solution. And that's really not true. Every problem or everything that requires a decision, a choice, has multiple solutions. And this is where you can intertwine your faith and understanding that I'm better off determined upon the significance of the decision, making a quick decision. And so determined upon being prepared to make that decision, one of the criteria to determine whether I should make a quick decision or take my time is actually timing and risk tolerance itself. If you don't know the timing and risk tolerance of a more major decision, you shouldn't make the decision until you understand the timing and risk tolerance of it. And to the end, when do I pull a trigger? So I use timing and risk tolerance to determine if I should make that decision and which decision I should make accordingly. One of the things about decisions and why I say there's multiple solutions in a decision that you make is that the instant that you make a decision or the instant you come to an agreement, whether it's written, implied, verbal, with consideration, without, the minute you come to a decision, time, emotion, and value change. So think about the significance that has in pulling the trigger. So if I've done the timing and risk tolerance analysis of selling my house, because as Eric and I were discussing, you know, last 2 years, we've had 16-foot waves over here, and I don't want to take that risk with one of my bigger assets. So I'd rather do a 1031 exchange up in an elevated area with an ocean view instead of right on the water. But in that course, time, emotion, and value has changed, because when I bought this house, I was keeping it for life because the risk was different. So even though I took the decision to buy this house at the time, with timing and risk tolerance, I am constantly, what, making different decisions that lie within the problem. So the key point is you pull the trigger determinative upon the timing and risk tolerance. And most people make decisions without any knowledge of timing and risk tolerance at all. They pay no attention to it. And here's the cool thing about when you get into the habit of analyzing, and you don't do it for everything. I'm not like, oh, I'm getting an acai bowl, you know, for lunch. The timing is going to take 36 minutes to get here. And the risk is I eat these once, I'm going to get fat. No, like these are for real decisions, like in business that we're doing. The interesting thing about timing and risk tolerance, it's actually an emotional benefit, which is an emotional expense that we all pay. It's called resentment and guilt. What limits us in our future decision-making is when we don't get a timing and risk tolerance analysis and we make a decision that doesn't work out. So then we become resentful and guilty, and then we don't make decisions moving forward because we're limiting our future by the meaning that we give our past mistakes. The meaning we give our past limits our self-image, allowing us never to overachieve our own self-image. So we're all the time in the theories of relativity, it's about the meaning. That's what makes things relative. Here's the cool thing about relativity and your control of your image is that you have the power, you personally, no one else has the power to give meaning or relativity to time, including the time that exists in the past. You control that. Not Einstein, not Elon Musk, you control that meaning. And so when we know our timing and risk tolerance, we actually stop the limitations of our future and we allow ourselves to learn from the mistakes and not feel resentful and guilty. Example, real quick, lottery tickets. Great example. Most people buy a lottery ticket knowing the timing and risk tolerance. They know it's $2. They know that there's about a 1 in a billion chance that you're going to win $500 million. And you know Saturday at 8 o'clock, you're going to know whether you won or lost. So on Saturday at 8 o'clock, the majority of the people, if not even, as we all know, not just the majority, sometimes all the people lost their money. But nobody that knows the timing and risk tolerance, nobody at all is resentful and guilty. It doesn't stop them from buying another lottery ticket. They're just disappointed because it aligned with the timing and risk tolerance that it was. That actually is applicable to pulling the trigger because you're not afraid, you're not trigger shy because you've already analyzed, okay, shit, if this is a 10% chance, when I fuck it up, hey, I'm disappointed, but I'm not gonna stop. I'm not resentful and guilty in any way. So make sure you understand this timing and risk tolerance philosophy when it comes to real decisions. If not, if you do this every time, you get decision exhaustion, and then you won't make any decisions either. And so you'll determine when these decisions, and that one step will make a huge difference in every decision you make. Yes, and then I'll go to here and then to.
What if you've never encountered that situation before? And I'll give you an example.
Yep.
When COVID hit, I was working for a guy who knew right away that this was going to be months, if not years.
Yeah. I was one of those guys.
What's that?
I was one of those guys. The minute they closed the NBA, because of my sports and business experience in major sports, when they closed the NBA, I said, this is not a two-week thing. And they have spent millions of dollars understanding this problem before they shut the NBA, which was going to cost them hundreds of millions of dollars, and they were not going to do it for 2 weeks. And so that's how my timing and risk tolerance, and that's why I think you were there when COVID hit. My first thing with everybody, I brought them in and I said, first, I want my camera guys to go upstairs on the roof and I want you to film today and I want you to keep coming back for the next 2 weeks and watch what happens. I immediately put my building for sale as well because I'd done really well. I owned the building. And so I knew that that type of office building was at its peak and it could stay the same through COVID, but most likely it wasn't. And so I put it on the market and ended up quickly selling the business before everything continued to unravel. But go ahead.
So you look at, I mean, if it's a situation you've never been in before, how do you know what factors to look at
in order to make that decision? So you're looking outside of yourself for what you can find inside of yourself. And this is true, not just about this circumstance, but all circumstance. So one of the things that I like to do is take control of certainty because you have a greater statistical success. So you said you don't know the circumstances. So how do we do that? Well, if you have non-negotiable behaviors, then circumstances don't matter. And so I go ahead and list out the non-negotiable things that are regardless of circumstance that I know no matter what the circumstances are, that I'm going to be better off than anyone else, if not better off myself as well. So one, a third of your life is spent doing what? Yes. So it's non-negotiable to me. Sleeping gives me recovery and access to information and inspiration or energy. So if I'm recovering better than everyone else, I'm going to perform better than everyone else. And if I have access to more information and more energy, I'm certainly going to perform better than anyone else. So I make my sleep, which for the sake of energy and information, my main non-negotiable. So no matter what my circumstances are, tomorrow I'm getting 8 hours of sleep. So I don't give a shit if it's the pandemic or the Chargers actually win the Super Bowl. I don't care whichever miracle is going to happen. I am going to get my sleep. Two, health. I spend a minimum of an hour a day on my health, regardless of the interest rates or the tariffs. I'm going to get a minimum of an hour with my family, regardless of the weather, regardless of Mother's Day. I'm going to get a minimum of time on my faith, my finance. I'm going to study time, including timing and risk tolerance and relativity, so that I'm constantly aligning the meaning of the time that I spent, but I'm already categorizing half my life with sleep. Half of my life is certain. Most people in life can't tell you that. And it's only based off of the one certainty that I know in the future, which is 24 hours. I guarantee you, all of us get 24 hours a day for the rest of our life until our heart stops, except for the last day you're cheated. And you'll hear me say that 50 times. Because it's so important to understand circumstances. All of the questions you'll see will be circumstantial in their nature. But if what if half of your life was non-circumstantial? Imagine how successful you'll be. And that's a secret sauce. And everybody has the power to do that according to the meaning they give their life and the priority they give their behaviors, according to themselves, not what Dave Meltzer says, not what Elon Musk says, not what God says, what you say because you're part of it all. I just got to figure out what we're doing to interfere with it. So in the study of relativity and time, I don't have to worry about it for half of it. Now, here's the cool thing. Regardless of the pandemic or tariffs or Mother's Day, 90% of your outcomes are based off of what you're willing to do every single day. In physics, it's because 2 minutes a day is worth 2 hours on a Saturday. So whatever you're committed to do 7 days a week, you're going to have an exponentiality of outcomes, which means half of my life is creating 90% of the outcomes that I desire or better. So one of the things that occurs by having non-circumstantial or non-negotiable behavior is that you can have more fun because 12 hours of your wake time really don't mean anything. So it takes all the pressure off of what you think pressure is on, these decisions that you're making, because you're like, I've already taken care of my shit. I've got my sleep, I got my family, my faith, my finance, my health, the study of time and relativity. Now I'm just going to have and enjoy the circumstances and prioritize it according to what's important to me today, according to the circumstances, in the divine direction that I think I want to be in or better. And so I'm actually making wiser choices with the other 12 hours of awake time and also more efficient because I'm having fun doing it because there's no pressure because I already know I've taken care of 90% of my success. So if I fuck up, which I will, all the other things, why do I say which I will? Because it's impossible with the trillions of variables involved. How are you not going to fuck up the rest of the 12 hours, right? It's nice to say, oh yeah, well, I did that during the pandemic. I've been wrong too. I told one of the girls that worked for me at one time, do not buy. Interest rates are like 2.3. I'm like, don't, the market's going to crash. The housing market's going to crash. Don't buy now. Don't buy now. That was the dumbest advice. I would have screwed her and her husband completely. So what I do to maximize it is I'm always looking within and saying, what are my, and this is what I did during the pandemic. What's my skills, my knowledge of who and what, and my desires. And I aligned it with what was doing well, what was stable during the pandemic, and what I thought would be doing well. So I took everybody on that day with Nick that we went up to the roof and videoed. I said, anyone, my Jerry Maguire moment at Sports One Marketing, we have millions of deposits on the Super Bowl, the Pro Bowl, the Masters, Kentucky Derby, the Breeders' Cup, the ESPYs, the Emmys, the Oscars, to do all of these VIP experiences for charity with tons of celebrities. I have all my deposits laid out for 2020. It is now March 17th, 2020. I'm screwed. Unless I apply my skills, my knowledge, and desires to what is doing well. What can we do virtually? Because I bet you that's going to do well. Right? I'm looking in the stock market. What stocks aren't moving right now? Those industries, those careers, those jobs are pretty freaking stable. Why? Right? Why is Zoom stock going up? Huh? Why is this? Oh, I get it. Maybe I should lean into, instead of doing my live Friday trainings, which I'd been doing back then for 22 years, 23 years, I should do this, be the first one online and say, hey, come. We had thousands of people, right? We got up to 100,000 people registered now because of what happened in the pandemic. If we're constantly aligning our skills, our knowledge, and our desires with what's doing well, what's stable, and what we think is doing well, and if you don't know how to figure it out, go to the stock market, look at the 50 stocks that have not moved. That means those are stable jobs, careers, and industries. Check out the stocks that are extremely volatile. You'll know that one of those may be doing well in the future. And then what's doing well today? Well, that's easy. What are the best performing stocks? What industries, careers, and jobs like Zoom? I picked up on right away. I'm like, wait a second. These the market's not stupid. People are, right? The aggregate of it. The market's not stupid. It goes by supply and demand. It's an emotional movement that occurs. And so you get momentum at its finest illustration by studying what's going on in the stock market. Not that you should invest in it, because there's no certainty to that. I don't care who tells me what. I can't tell you how many guys, and I won't use names, oh yeah, I'm a crypto this, I'm this kind of trader, I'm a day trader. I'm like, you're guaranteed to lose your money. Whenever they tell me, I can't tell you how many of those guys told me how successful they are, and they're, renting their house, they're out of there, their car's repoed, and their whole guarantee of success is gone. Why? Because there's trillions of variables. How the fuck do you know? There's no way you know. You can get it for a little while, but all it takes is what? One circumstance that is not aligned with what you think, and you lose all your money. It's just chance. If that's what you desire, that's good, but at least know your timing and risk tolerance, that most likely you're going to lose all your money. All right, great question.
ChatGPT wants to know, when you were rebuilding after losing everything, what was the single biggest shift that you made that had the biggest difference on how you approach business and life going forward?
Absolutely, faith. So the biggest decision in my life was I was now not just going to seek wisdom, I was going to have faith. And so I went on a journey to say, there's an infinite source, a unified, abundant, infinite source that has infinite information and energy, and it loves me, protects me, promotes me more than my mom. So I simplified it back then. I'm like, there's something bigger than me that loves me more than my mom. Therefore, when you lose everything, when your basement has a basement, and when I say that, I mean, I lost over $100 million, including my mom's house. And the worst part, the basement of the basement, was the only reason I wanted to be rich was to buy her house, and I lost her house. That basement had a basement. And so when I decided I'd shift the paradigm instead of trying to get more money back, more healthy, more wealthy, worthy, all this more, when you want more, there's always more. So how are you ever going to get more? Think about it. But when I said to myself, there's an unlimited amount of that, what am I doing to interfere with it? And so utilizing a shift in paradigm, saying it's going to be the wisdom and my faith that when there's no evidence, when there's no evidence or the evidence is contrary to where I want to be or better, I know that these circumstances, these problems that exist today are protecting, promoting, love, and perfecting me. They're indicating I have a better place to be. And I have a choice. I can be punished by it and give it a failure, or I can stay committed to my non-negotiable behaviors and learn from these problems, pains, and make this unbelievable maneuver with it into divinity. And I will tell you, I would have been the last person before I lost everything to tell you I'm one of the strongest faith-based people you'll ever meet. I have more faith. I can look at things that other people would cry. You know, Viktor Frankl may be, you know, someone that I would say is in my league of giving meaning to things, of seeing protection, promotion. Now, I don't want that moniker of getting that challenged, but I've been there, right? I always tell, difference between religious people and spiritual people, I think they have equal amount of faith. My thing is, I believe religious people are afraid of going to hell. Spiritual people have been there. They don't want to go back. Chris, I like your hat, Chris.
Thank you so much. I love this. I don't go anywhere without it.
Hi, Chris.
This isn't a joke, but it might sound like a joking question. Now that you're a doctor and you travel the world, congratulations.
Thank
by
you.
The way. You know, have you been to places where they're like, we have remedies, you know, or because you're an open-minded person, or like, you know, try the sweat off this frog's back or something. Like,
yeah, that's good Colorado solution.
Does that happen to you when you're traveling in your travels?
Yeah, so first I want to mention the honorary doctorate in chiropractic humanities that I received. I had problems with it other than the fact that the real purpose for me was I got to tell my mom that I was a doctor before she passed. And what came to me, this revelation of the significance, was a video right afterwards I posted that meant the most to me, which was I got to tell my mom, I'm a doctor, I'm a lawyer, and a failure, proud to say. Because my mom always said, you're either a doctor, a lawyer, or a failure. Well, I'm all three. And by getting the honorary doctorate, which is a different type of acknowledgement than the work I put in and the investment I made to be a real lawyer and pass the bar and go to law school, compared to the dummy tax I paid to be a failure, which to me, looking at what everyone else would think is impressive, I take great value in the fact that I'm a great failure. Not many people brag about that. I'm one of the best failures you're going to meet. I know how to fail because I know how to learn from it and accelerate to a better place from the lessons I've learned. And I will continue to be a great failure the rest of my life. And so when I travel the world, I am exposed to all types of, and on the internet, people send me, people send me stuff, I give it to my wife.
How many churches try to get you saved?
No. I am saved, man. I people ask me what religion I am. I'm like, tell me about your religion. Jesus, Jesus bigger than me, loves me more than my mom. They're like, absolutely. I go, I love Jesus. That's awesome. Yeah, that's fine with me. Buddha the same way. Yeah.
Dave, I just wanted to see if you're comfortable with answering this question.
Sure.
Your mom passed away recently. And
yeah.
My mom passed away 4 years ago, and instantly a lot of life lessons came to me, and I got focused very clearly on what I need to do in my life. And I was just wondering if it's too early, maybe.
No, this is.
It unlocked some new kind of.
It did. So my favorite quote is still, you're either humble or you're about to be. And I have a philosophy about the simple things to do or simple not to do. So lean into the simple things. It's like cliches. I love cliches because they're time tested. That's the best advice you can get. If shit's been said for hundreds of years, then you should maybe pay attention more to that than some other idiot like Dave Meltzer telling you something new. Right? Go with the old stuff that works. So I've been working on trying to be present when I'm not humble, because then I'm interfering with my faith. I'm interfering with the source, with the infinite amount of information and energy. So it's a good indicator, if I'm not humble, that I'm interfering with my better self, my higher self, my potential. And so I thought when my mom died, I got to tell her the last time I saw her, and I knew she was dying because my wife's mom had passed when she was 25, and she was preparing me. And my siblings were fighting her. They were mad at her because she was like, you need to get down there again, Dave. She's going to die in the next 2 weeks. And my sister's freaking out going, what a negative. What, Julie, that's negative. She's like, no, I'm helping you. You want to say goodbye. So I was down there, and last time I got to see her, I got to tell her I'm a doctor, a lawyer, and a failure. But I also got to tell her I loved her, that I'm happy and healthy and appreciate her. I got to say goodbye. She knew who I was and kissed me goodbye. And so I'm leaving, and Julie said, are you going to be okay? Because Julie knew that was going to be the last time. She was on morphine. You try to be familiar, but you don't really get it until you see this. My dad had passed, but it wasn't like this. And I handled that, and I'm thinking, no problem. I'll be fine. So, a day later, I'm in the shower, and Julie came in and told me my mom had passed. And she had stuff on the stove, or she would have stayed. She went downstairs, and my heart broke. I dropped. I couldn't stand. I was just crying in the shower. And my son, who's 14 at that time, just hugged me, telling me, it's okay, Dad. And I couldn't function. I take pride in the fact that I had never felt my heart break before in my life. And the first time was when my mom passed. I got to experience that, and it shows you the significance of her life, as I'm sure your mom and yours. But all I could think of when I was recovering, and still recovering, is, man, you're either humble. So when I hear myself saying, I got this, I know this, this is, Dave Meltzer truth coming right at you for, no, this is what I think I know. I have suggestions and questions to help people create their own realities. When I tell you, you give meaning to everything you see, I believe that, but I can't prove it. But I know it helps me get to where I want to be. I know it takes out the limitations I put on myself by giving meaning to my bankruptcy of a positive meaning, not you big loser. The things that went through my mind when I lost everything, self-loathing and embarrassment and all these things that get me nowhere. At least they don't get me to where I want to be or better. So for me, it was that reminder that I am humble. And humility means a tranquil human being. It doesn't mean a lazy human being. It doesn't mean to stay at home high on your mom's couch, sick and broke all the time, doing nothing. It's how can you allow all this energy to come through you as you're at ease? I'm one of the most active people that you will ever meet. I am one of the most productive people you will ever meet. I have more energy than I've ever had in my life, and I'm not in as good a shape or as young as I used to be, that's for sure. It's because I live a majority of the time, not minutes and moments, the majority of my day in tranquility and humility, accessing information of a higher source and energy from a higher source to utilize in my... All right, guys. All right, one quick thing.
Let's say all your books are deleted, all your quotes, everything. What's the last piece of advice you would want to leave with humanity?
Be kind to your future self and do good deeds. Be kind to your future self, do good deeds. I just wrote a forward for a book called Imagine If, and I, through the process, was thinking, what are some of the things I could imagine that would have an amazing impact that are simple, like saying thank you? Imagine if I could teach everybody to say thank you. Think about it. What if everybody said thank you? Like you opened a door and they're like, thank you. And you went here and they said thank you. And before they went to bed, they said thank you. And when they woke up, they said thank you. Imagine what the whole world would be like with one simple thing. Imagine if I could do that. Imagine if I could teach people to pick up trash when they saw it and put it into its appropriate place. Imagine how quickly the earth would heal itself. How hard is that? There's nobody out there that are empowering people with these simple things to imagine if. And for me, it's real simple. I want people to be kind to their future self and do good deeds, whether it's saying thank you or picking up trash or just smiling at someone. Imagine if the world was kind to its future self and did good deeds. All of it. That's it.
Thanks for being here, Dave.
Thank you, guys.